there's we have fun with it. I don't know.
So who else have you had on?
Wade Beavers, if you know Wade at all. Yeah. He's been on. Gosh, all kinds of people. Alexis Simmons, she does Rodan and Fields. Who else did we recently have? We had the executive director of the YMCA, Virginia. She's the new CEO of the YMCA. There's another entrepreneur here recently that we had.
Well, we have a few nonprofits.
We had a guy that owns Path and Medical. It's a large medical company. You wouldn't what's his name?
Cool.
What's his name? Jeremy. So he is in Dodge Center, but his company is based out of Florida, and he's built this medical device company that does X amount of million in revenue a year. It's just huge. And he came up here to look at a space, and we were like, you want to be on a podcast? So, yeah, all kinds of just different things.
Like when? Like right now?
Yeah, like, sit down, let's go. All right, we'll get started here. 3, 2... Offices at China Hall on a Friday.
Friday afternoon.
We made it. Another Friday. I can't believe it. We got through the snowstorm. Did you have to shovel or did you protest shoveling?
I protested shoveling.
Did you really?
Sure. Yes.
I did the same for the most part. I have a rental property and I was like, no, that should be all right. They should be able to get over that snow.
I did the same.
my car was frozen though.
It was
like,
it?
Like an inch of ice just on it. And all the scrapers were put away because, you know, winter was over. I found this like fat piece of rubber and I was like smashing like my car with it to like try to break the ice. And I finally got through. So.
Yeah. Welcome. Yeah, you run the heater long enough, it'll melt off.
Welcome to April in Minnesota. My name is Bucky Beeman. I am one of the co-founders of the offices of China Hall here in downtown Rochester and a commercial real estate agent also. And I'm joined here today.
I'm Josh Langmaid. I own MediaCore in town. We do video production and social media marketing.
And who's our special guest sitting across the table?
I'm Jay Meyer. I'm an entrepreneur here in Rochester and businessman and family man, all of that.
Awesome. Like I just told you, Jay, you know, Josh was asking me on the way as we were waiting here. He's like, who is this person? I said, I don't know. I don't know who it is. You'll have to wait and see. So everybody gets to wait and see. And then someone came up to the office space and he's like, what's his name? I'm like, that's not our guest. So we're here to learn and we're excited. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
This afternoon. Jay, I've known a little bit of your story, but let's go back to the origin of the beginning of Jay.
The beginning of Jay. Well, I grew up in Kansas City, had parents that just poured into me, just so thankful for that. I went to school at the University of Missouri after meeting a Minnesota girl at Bethel for a few years. So we kind of migrated back north, and in 2000 we landed here in Rochester to start our business, which was Meyer Tree and Lawn. And so I was just a tree guy. You know, I didn't know a whole lot about business other than what it took to survive. And I painted houses through high school and college, and so I knew that you go out there, you work hard, you make people happy, and it works. And so we started our business. I remember going to the bank here in Rochester, and my wife and I were both working in Southeast Iowa. And as we moved up here, she quit her job. We had a new baby, and I quit my job, and we were looking for some money. And so we went to the bank, and we said, I'd like to start a business, and I'd like to buy a home. And so in today's market, that just would not fly.
And you're nuts.
So, and actually we started out on the home. I said, I'd like to buy a home. And they said, okay, well, what's your job? I says, well, I just recently quit. I'm starting a business. That's another thing I'll need some money for. And I says, well, how about your wife? Does she work? So no, she recently quit as well. So the odds stacked against you, but I had a good business plan and Home Federal at the time took a chance on me and it worked out good for them, and it worked out good for me.
That's awesome. So in the college days, did you have, like, this entrepreneurial gene of, like, I'm going to do something someday?
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, I
hadn't worked for somebody until after college, other than some college jobs, you know, where on campus. But so I painted houses. I worked for, you know, me and a buddy had our own business, Just Us Painting, and it was just us. And we had some ladders and, and some ladders and paintbrushes and rollers. And you know, for 7 summers straight, actually maybe even 8 summers straight, we painted houses and had had a clientele and not too many repeat customers in that amount of time, or at least you'd hope for a painter that 7 years wouldn't make a repeat customer. But we had a lot of neighbors. And so when I got out of college, my first job, I have a degree in forestry. And so my first job was working for a tree company. And that was down in Memphis, Tennessee, and cut my teeth doing that and said, I kind of like this.
And did you think you were going to be in the tree business when you were going to school for forestry?
I thought I would be in the forestry business.
Okay.
Yeah, but after Memphis, I spent 4 years in Southeast Iowa as a consulting forester. And I realized that I actually really liked arboriculture. So there's, you know, my dad always says, Jay, don't worry about how much somebody makes, because at the top of any field, there's plenty of money. And so it was just great advice. So I went into this field that historically has, you know, people get, you know, $25,000 a year and they can work their way up to 40, you know, but I just knew that I was going to turn this into a business somehow. That's always been something that I had a knack for.
That's solid advice.
Yeah.
Isn't it? I mean, like every single industry has money in it, and every single,
go
field,
be the best at it.
Right. You'll if you're passionate
much money
about
as you want.
It. And you're passionate about it. And what is it like to be passionate about forestry? Because I feel like from the outsider looking in, it's cutting down trees.
Right.
But being on the inside, it's so much more than that.
Right.
What's it like?
So that's a great question, because I think what actually inspires me now more than anything is getting a group of people to do something together. And it doesn't matter if it's in trees or if it's in, you know, whatever. But that early on, you know, I loved being outside. I loved what a tree stood for. You know, it could outlive me and it could take a lot more than me. And it's like, yeah, I got some respect for that guy. And so just to have this majestic thing that engineers can't even design on their own, you can't cantilever things that stick out that far.
Right.
You know, I was just fascinated by the physics of it, by the biology and the physiology, just everything about it. I was just fascinated by it. And what it's like to be passionate about anything, you guys probably know this, but you don't work a day in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you wake up every day doing the thing that you absolutely love doing, and you go to bed at night feeling good about what you did, even though it was hard and there's stresses. You know, it's, you don't work a day in your life.
So 2000, Home Federal takes a chance on you.
Yeah.
Shout out to Home Federal.
Yep.
They've actually asked, possibly interested, to be a sponsor on this podcast, and we need to get back to them. And I think that just shows that they're entrepreneurial in their own set of ways.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, to take a chance and be like,
right. No right-minded banker would have loaned me money. They were crazy too.
So they take a chance on you. What did that look like then?
Yeah. I mean, it was, I think I had $10,000 to my name, and I leveraged it. And I think I bought a truck and a chipper and some operating, you know, an operating line of credit. And I think I had like $65,000 in debt. And
some insurance, hopefully.
And some insurance, right. Yeah. But, you know, we right from the start, we said, you know, we're not just your average tree company. We're not just tree cutters. We're tree care professionals. And so it was me and one guy to start with. And we hired another and another. And before long, you know, it wasn't too long. And we had, you know, a staff of 15, and we had, you know, sales team, and then it grew to a staff of 20. And, you know, just, you'd never think that there's that much opportunity in a small town like Rochester to take care of trees and make a really good living at it. But, and not just me make a good living, but I have other guys that were making really good livings at doing this tree care business.
What were some of the growing pains of growing a company from 0 to 2 to 15 to 20?
Yeah, so many mistakes. If I could just undo all the mistakes, I'd have a great team in place right now that would still be there. But unfortunately, I probably ruined some careers. You know, I promoted somebody to a position they weren't capable of doing or equipped for. And, you know, I couldn't retract them back to the old position and disengaged them. And you know, just things like that constantly, right? And you know, sometimes I was really careful how much to leverage myself. And I think, knowing what I know now, I could have leveraged a little more and grown a little quicker.
Leverage being borrowing money from
borrowing,
a bank.
Borrowing some money, right.
Because you're paying it back as you're growing your business, and then you're like, okay, next level. Like, I gotta get that piece of equipment or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, and I got to a point, and I mean, it was a comfortable place to buy a piece of equipment with cash, and you know, but I didn't have to do that. I could have, and we had, you know, stacked year after year of 20% growth, and, you know, and even, you know, 3 or 4 years in a row where it was like 35% growth. So, I mean, it wasn't like, we were growing slow, but man, we could have taken over Minnesota with the team that we had if I would have just known what I know now.
Hmm.
So, if you were to give like somebody advice on how to scale their company,
yeah,
like they're getting to that point where it's growing and they need to start scaling it to bigger,
yeah,
what would be like just a few tips that you would tell someone like that?
Well, first of all, start out with understanding your purpose. Like, why do you exist? You know, what do you want? Because there's a lot of people who shouldn't scale their business. That's just not really what they want. They want to be able to come home at the end of the night and, you know, and sit down on their porch and relax with their family. And I think that's just fantastic. And, you know, but the guy that wants to grow, he's committing to a different thing. You know, he's committing to, you know, putting it all on the line and living and breathing it a little longer. So just really figure out what you want, their purpose. Then put good people around you. So I have this, you know, purpose, people, process, problems, right? So those are the kind of things, you know, how are you going to, what seats are you going to fill? You know, try to make sure you have the right people in place around you. And I like to go to work. I want people that also like to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to work with people I like. So I would just say surround yourself with people you like that want the same thing you want, have the same purpose in life. Processes, you know, whether it's a billing process or a sales process, just make it so it's not just in your head, but help, you know, put it down so that somebody else can do it too.
What's an example of a process you've put in place when you're building your company?
So I, you know, the easiest one probably to talk about would be a billing or accounts receivable process where, you know, the job is done, the paper goes in a basket, the bookkeeper knows to grab these and invoice these and have a time set, you know, by the next day, these need to be invoiced. And, you know, and these get mailed out in these envelopes on this letterhead. You just have everything defined so that you can plug somebody into that and they'll know exactly what to do. And at 30 days, you send this statement. And at 60 days, you know, we have a phone call. And just that whole thing from the time you bill to the time to be able to hand that to somebody, that's if you can hand them this written process and they can do it, well, then you have a good process in place.
And were you having to build those processes then, each one of them?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then teaming up with whoever was next to you who's going to maybe take that position? Or did you initially like hold a lot of those positions of building it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you start out small, you do every position.
Yeah.
You're the salesperson, you're the production foreman, you're the, you know, the bookkeeper, you know, and so you have to decide which one am I going to let go of first. And so you'd kind of assess how much time you're spending at each one. And a production foreman was a key one because that takes every day. And so if I could hire a production foreman, you know, now I can actually step back and do some of these other things. I can put more time into sales.
Mm.
But yeah, I had to build each one. And if I had to do it all over again, and this is what I, you know, I love doing, I would talk to a guy who has done it before. And I would say, help me figure this out. Because, man, I recreated so many different wheels that were just sitting there in somebody else's mind that I could have said, I want to hire you as a consultant, or I want to talk to my friend who's been through this.
In the same industry or just kind of business in general?
Well, and so I had a lot of business in general, but I'm thinking find somebody in the industry. Find somebody, or at least in the service industry,
okay,
who maintains these kinds of relationships with clients and employees. And what are you doing? Ask them that and say, and you know, what can I glean from that? And I would do that, but not nearly as much as I should have.
Not as intentional, probably.
Not as intentional.
Right. It's like you'd sit down on a podcast and you'd listen. It wasn't a podcast, but you'd sit down on a podcast. I'd hear it all. And then it's like, okay, when we're done here, we need to start implementing some processes.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yep. Or you'd read a book and you say, wow, that's amazing. And you look at the back cover and it was written in like 1978. It's like, wait a minute, I could have learned this a long time ago.
Yeah, what took me so long? My question would be, how did you maintain the family life while building the business. I mean, that is, that's two amazing things to build. How?
Yeah. Like, well, first of all, I have just a fantastic wife that was my partner in this business. And even though she never did the bookkeeping or never did anything, you know, she understood the purpose is like, hey, I take care of the things on the home front right now with the kids. And she's more educated than me. She has a master's degree. She could have easily gone out and made more money, you know, than I did at the time. But she was all in. She says, we're doing this. And so that's, you know, I think to have a partner in that way that just is so supportive, and, you know, it just makes it easy for me just to, okay, whatever I can do for you,
yep,
I'm going to do for you. And you know, we have five kids, and so that was a challenge. And there were many, you know, many nights where, you know, I'd put the kids down and I'd made that a priority, but then I'd go back to work, mm-hmm, and I'd get on my computer and I'd type up the rest of the proposals I was giving to people. And even sometimes it was like, you know, go to bed in a sense, you know, I tuck the kids in, I spend time with my wife, and even like as I lay my head on the pillow, I'm kind of keeping one eye open, seeing if she, as soon as her eyes close, I sneak out, you know, where I complete the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's like now, and then I crawl back in bed and the alarm goes off and we both wake up and it's like, here we are.
Yeah, here we go. So you had to push through it. I mean, yeah, that's the perseverance of like, all right, I'm doing both and we're going to make this thing, yep, really work.
Right. And it would be really easy to sacrifice on something. And, mm-hmm, and you know, I give kudos to the people who say, hey, I'm not doing this. I'm going to commit to just my family. Right. Great. I think that's fantastic. But I also give kudos to the guys that gritted it out and that find time for their family. And, mm-hmm, you know, it's hard, but it's good.
Five kids.
Yeah.
Are they like all helpers and cutting down trees, yeah, at any point?
Yeah. So I only got one boy out of the bunch. So
the team of 20 was actually five family members, yeah, cutting trees, right, and branches. I'd go prune that one.
Yeah. But yeah, no, they were all, I remember stuffing plenty of envelopes and,
yes,
you know, we'd have them say, kids, here's our fun for the night. And I'd put the whole marketing thing down. It's like, we fold this, build a process for them.
Sweet. Your company's growing. Your company is doing well, I imagine. You're getting up to that larger team of like 15 and 20 when it's Meyer, Forest, and Tree. Did in that process at any point, did it cross your mind like, I don't know if I want to do this forever.
Yeah. Like, yeah. In fact, you know my story. So I sold my business in 2014. And you know, entrepreneurs like you, like me, I mean, there's something about running a business where it's just, it's the day in and day out. And then there's something about growing a business. That's just, I mean, that's what I loved. And, you know, solving problems, how do I get to the next level? And so in my, you know, my now recent steps, you know, I've done that for other people through consulting, and now taking a step into Sargent's Landscape Nursery that says, okay, so they're trying to get over a hump, and it's like, okay, this challenge really excites me. And they were a client for a long time, and so now move into this role of being the guy to kind of work them through the next decade or two decades, whatever it happens to be. That's thrilling to me. And I suppose if we get to a place that it's settling down and it's now you just need a stable business manager, there's probably guys that are better at that than me.
So this opportunity that's around the corner,
yeah,
that just started, right?
Yeah, actually just started, yeah.
So their business is, it's a long-standing Rochester business. I,
yep,
mean, very well respected. And I have no idea of the details of the business, but there gets to a point, and I look at like my father's business, like he has the Snappy Stop in town. Shout out to the sponsor of the Styrofoam,
yeah,
Cups.
I just ate there the other day.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Jay. So you got to innovate. Like things are changing around.
That's
you.
That's right.
And you got to get to that next level. So somebody like yourself comes in and you try to help get to that next level. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of what the role might be?
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of times it has nothing to do with the plants or the, you know, the landscape designs and all of that stuff. You know, there's two sides of any business. There's a smart side of business, which is all the processes and all those pieces. And then there's a healthy side of business, which is everybody feels good about the culture that's there. And, you know, we communicate well, we know how to solve problems together, we have a high level of trust and that sort of stuff. And as I've consulted over the last few years, that's where I've really found that it's like, that's my sweet spot. That's what I absolutely love. And because there's this, this thing I can look in different businesses and I see some guys that are just driving their people, right? And then there's other guys that are, it's like everybody's carrying the load. And the ones that where everybody, where they're using everybody's brain power to solve the problems, they always do better. Mm. You know, you're putting good people in place and you're, and the other thing that I'm really, you know, when I was consulting, when I was running my business, it's always been blue collar work. Now my company's green collar consultants, but the blue collar trades have gotten robbed of good people over the years, because you know every culture says you got to go to college, and when you get out of college, you got to get a good office job. And the reality is that there's so many people out there that deserve the dignity of a blue-collar profession where they have the opportunity to advance and to really do well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that, you know, there's something nostalgic about, you know, the guy coming home or girl coming home with their lunch pail in their hand and they set it down, your kid jumps in their arms, and that's it for the night, right? Mm-hmm. That then they don't think about anything else. And in the window next to them is the guy that's the white-collar, and he's still on his cell phone and he's working away at his computer. And, you know, there's something nobly simple and pure about the blue-collar trades
mm-hmm.
that I think have the most opportunity come in. And so when I work with companies, and Sargent's is one of these, you know, the thing that thrills me is to see where the flesh meets the work, you know, whether it's the dirt or the wrench or whatever, you know, it's like that's where the money's being made in that company. And how can we provide opportunity for them and give dignity to those jobs, keep increasing their pay while the ownership and the white collar side of those businesses can still, you know, do well also.
And now with technology, it's like completely changing the processes of business. It's
yes.
changing the communication form of business, even to the customer. Like, so in these blue collar industries, there's so many things changing around it. But the one thing I'll say is a lot of the processes for actually implementing the work sometimes remains the same.
It does.
It's that's unique. Yeah.
But you talk differently.
Yeah.
You know, and there's this sense of a team that's out doing a landscape job or doing a tree job. And I mean, they communicate almost primitively. I mean, it's like, you know, you kind of nod your head and they know it's like, that means go get the rope, you know?
Yeah.
You know, or like right there, get it over here. It's like, that means give me the shovel, you know? And you hear a whistle, just, you know, or hey,
you know, turn the skid loader around.
Right. You know, and it's this different kind of communication and it's good, right? It's not, it's an advanced communication. Yeah. It's not a primitive communication. And so I think that, yeah, it's the same processes, but how do you talk about it in a way that the blue collar guy with the dirty hands can understand and say, yeah, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's, yeah, I like that.
If you had to rewind the clock relating to, you know, let's say you're at that point in your business where you're like, this is actually a decent size and we can go on to this next level. What would be some advice to that entrepreneur that's at that level of like, all right, the model is working. Now what do I decide as far as do I go bigger? Do I go smaller?
Right.
Do I, you know, double down, triple down?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it goes back to purpose, you know, like, what do you want out of life? Don't go somewhere that you don't want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of guys who do that. They keep getting bigger and bigger, and they're just miserable the whole time,
mm-hmm.
you know. But there's also guys that, I mean, they're ready to take that next step. And if they were to really stretch their mind and say, hey, where do you imagine yourself in 10 years? And, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, I just want to still be doing this work. You know, whether it's a plumber or electrician or a tree guy or landscaper, but most of the time they're 35 and they're saying, man, in 10 years, I don't know that I can still be doing this. My back's sore, my knees hurt. And so you help them envision. It's like, okay, so how can you get there? where you're not doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But you, and the issue always is, but I do the best quality work, and that's what my clients pay for. So then there's process, you know, and so, and there's people, you know, so that's, there's that purpose, people, process trilogy that it just comes into play. So I would say, if you're there, dig into purpose. Like, what do you want out of life? Don't go somewhere you don't want to go, but if you want to go there, get some help, figure out how to get there.
As far as money that maybe you wish you wouldn't have spent while building your business, what's an example of something that you just like, maybe I shouldn't have bought that, or maybe I should. So I, and the reason I think of it is because like I bought, when the iPad came out, I bought an iPad, right. And it's like, looking back of what the iPad actually was, it was like, why did I waste that money? Like it was flashy and cool, but
yeah. You know, most of the stuff that I bought through the years that was significant were, it was equipment, it was a chipper or a stump grinder, you know, things like that. And, you know, every time I knew 100% sure I needed it, because either I was subcontracting it out to somebody else, and it's like, okay, this is one way that I can, you know, engage a guy and say, like, he's going to own the stump grinding. And this will be his area to kind of prove himself. And so it's like, well, to do that, I need to buy a stump grinder.
Got it.
So I don't think there was things, it's probably outside of the business, you know, and entrepreneurs, you know, we dabble in a bunch of things, and I can think of plenty of things. It's like, boy, I shouldn't have done that. But within my core business,
there wasn't much waste.
Yeah. I don't think there was a whole lot of waste.
How about marketing dollars?
I think I always took a perspective on marketing that I didn't have to measure it. Right. And not, I mean, there's some things that I want ROI, like if I'm sending out a mailer with, but brand building is where I really focused on my brand building. And it wasn't, you know, it's hard to put an ROI on that, but you would know how people talk about you and like the types of customers that are calling you, you would know if you're effective or if you're not. Sometimes I would say, boy, that, you know, I look at some of my early marketing stuff and it's like, yeah, I was appealing to a price conscious crowd. You know, I wasn't appealing to the person who just wanted it done right, to trust a company, to come in their yard, to do it safely, you know, and over time I learned that that's my branding. That's, I need to have people picture me this way so the right people call me.
Yeah. What's an example of what you felt like was a good marketing effort? Or brand effort?
So I would say, you know, probably 2012 or so, we were trying to relate plant healthcare to healthcare, right? So people could understand in their minds, it's like, well, why do I need plant healthcare? And so we came up, and I'll shout out to another company, but MLT Group, you know,
yeah.
You know, worked with it at the time, you know, and they came up with this concept, Timmy and Tree. So it was just this relationship between this boy and this tree, and basically, you know, so we had this series of postcards that really helped our clients understand. It's like, oh, okay, so just like, Timmy goes to the doctor and has this done. Well, Tree needs this done.
Got it.
And so,
and you're sending it to existing customers.
Yeah. And prospects.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and we really tracked and measured that, you know, so that, you know, we had a list of, you know, 12,000 names that we were tracking over time to see how many of them were turned into clients and the type of clients that we wanted, that cared about their trees, that cared about them enough to spend resources on them.
Hmm.
So in the consulting side of what you're doing, working with these different companies, you come across, you know, I'm sure there's marketing topics and branding topics and stuff like that. How do you tell the guy, or, you know, even show the value of branding compared to marketing when, you know, a lot of it seems more like older generations is like, it's that ROI. If I pay for marketing budget, I want to see return.
Yeah.
How do you make them understand the importance of branding with that?
Ooh, that's a good question. That's probably right up your alley too, yeah. Isn't it? You know, I think it goes back to probably purpose and vision again. You know, it's like, where do you want to be? And you know, there's a workflow to getting anywhere you want. Like, I want to be a $20 million company. And so it's like, okay, well, to do that, I've got to, you know, first do these things, and you break it down to 100 different things. And so this branding is like you're starting to paint the picture in the mind's eye of people of what you want to be, not just who you are, but you know, mm-hmm. where you want. And so until people can see you that way, you'll never be that. And so I think that somebody just has to get it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's your baby.
Yeah, because I come across people that like get it, and it's just easy, and
right.
You know, we don't have to do anything. But then there's like, I have to see the return, or
right. If I'm gonna spend $100, I better be making $200 yeah. in return. And it sounds like, well, you're building your company. Some of it was like, this is gonna help build our brand, and the ROI yeah. is measured through what people are saying about our company and how they perceive that we are yes. or want
to
be.
And all of that said, you know, if my bottom line wasn't good, I wouldn't be able to spend that money yeah. on branding. It would be on marketing. It would be on sales and trying to get people to buy. So we, you know, I think branding has more to do with when you're marketing. You know, if you're marketing when you need work, you're not branding. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to do, I mean, you're going after advertising, right? You want work now, but is, you know, so to get the businesses that you know, hey, we're in a good spot, things are moving, and a person that says, hey, good enough is never good enough, right? And if you can get that type of person, they're going to say, okay, what's next? You know, how can I, and branding has everything to do with how much you can charge for your services. It doesn't have like how much services you get. It's how much can you charge for them? And it allows you to, like when we started lawn care in 2013, and we actually changed our logo and our brand from Meyer Forest and Tree to Meyer Tree and Lawn. And there was a lot of work around that. And you know the type of work that happens, but it allowed us to grow our business with our existing client base to do more work for the same clients. And it was amazing how, and you'll get this because this is what you do, but people started saying, man, I see your trucks everywhere all of a sudden. Do you guys buy a whole bunch more trucks? Nope. You know, we have a more visible brand, and yeah. you know, the mark became more simple, and it was reproducible to more different things, and it was, you know, the brand book, it was consistent whether you're on a print piece or on a billboard or on the TV. It all kind of looked like the same thing, or the trucks.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's that consistency in there.
Yeah.
And it was clean. I mean, I'm thinking yeah. about their brand. Their brand is very clean. And that's what yeah. I like about even like your green collar consultants now. It's a very yeah. clean looking brand, which catches people's attention if properly yep. distributed and put out there. It's neat.
So when did green collar consultants come about?
Oh, that's a great question. So in 2014, sold my business, and the company Davy Tree out of Kent, Ohio, acquired us. And I had a 3-year commitment to them. And so during that time, I thought, you know, I could potentially do this if in a big, they're a $1 billion company. And so I said, I'm going to give this 3 years and give it a good college try to see if I can make an impact in a company like this and maybe even go beyond. And 2017 came around and my 3 years was up. And you know, the opportunities and the impact, I mean, it's a big company. They're set in kind of how they do things. And some of the things that I saw weren't changing quick enough for me. And so I said, that's okay. You know, they're not a bad company, but we're just not really aligned in purpose, mm-hmm. right? And so purpose drove me to this. And I love helping people. I love helping light bulbs come on. Mm-hmm. And so I had 20-something years of experience in at that point, and I had a pretty good reputation in the industry. And so I, you know, without much marketing or advertising, you know, the word got around that, hey, Jay's consulting now. And so I started getting calls from good companies that either needed to organize around some objectives, that whether it's they're trying to get over a hump of growth, or whether they're just trying to build processes that make it so they can grow later. Sometimes it was helping them hire a CEO or that sort of thing. But I think people just valued the fact, one, that I'm always learning. I don't have things figured out. I'm trying, right? And so, mm-hmm. but I have a lot of experience. I've made more mistakes than them, so that makes me a consultant.
There you go. And then did that ultimately help lead to the sergeant's role as well?
Yeah,
then?
So they were a client. Okay. They identified an issue that they wanted to help, and Forrest and Nick, the ownership there, you know, had a lot of foresight to say that, hey, I don't know that we're equipped to compete in the labor market moving forward, and we need to have some fundamental changes in the way we think and the way we do things. And so credit to them, they hired me as a consultant, and we worked through a lot of different things, and we just gelled. It was a good fit. And a few months ago, they started talking to me about, hey, could this role be more? And you know, it could be, right? And as we talked more, I realized this is a good fit.
Neat.
So yeah, we're digging in, and I think you're going to see a big splash with some of the things that, I mean, they've got a great team already. So now just to add some organizational leadership to that, I think is going to be a powerful thing.
How big is Sergeants? I mean, just generally people.
Yeah,
seasonally,
they, you know, I think last year they had 150 W-2s,
wow.
You know, so, and that's, you know, the part-time garden center workers,
right.
The landscape crew, you know, there's a lot of pieces to that, and it really booms in the spring, summer, fall, and then it shrinks back down.
Of what, and you probably don't know exact, but what percentage of that is commercial and what percentage of that is residential? Is there about a split, or is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the target is primarily residential.
Okay.
Yeah, homeowners. But, I mean, I think that we have a lot of opportunity in commercial, especially with the landscape installation. And Brian Newell over there, he's fantastic at commercial projects. So he'll just keep growing the commercial side of that.
Neat. That's really neat. And
no,
I definitely know their brand. And I love their billboards. Their billboards that they put out in the spring. I don't know if you've noticed them yet, but the one just came out, I feel like, because I saw it on Highway 52.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, and one of the things that they're talking about, this is branding, right? You know, like one of the things that we do better than everybody else is we're locally grown. Like we're not, no offense to the Hy-Vee, you know, garden centers and things like that, but they're buying stuff from all over. That's what they do. They provide a niche, you know, but what Sargent's does is they locally grow their stuff. They grow it. And their greenhouses have been cranking for the last month solid, and I mean planting little things, and it's pretty fun to watch, and they do have a great team.
And you have two garden centers, would it be called, right?
Right.
So north, far north.
Yes, that's on I think north of 18th Avenue, on north of 75th Street.
Yep.
And then the Sargent's on Second.
Sargent's on Second's a unique location because it's like close to downtown.
Right.
And it's a beautiful place as far as a building is concerned and the facilities that they have set up. And I don't know when that went in, but they were looking out to the future of what Second Street was at the time and what it's to become.
Yes. That was back in the 80s, right? And that was a good move.
What do you got, Josh? Go for it.
Well, just on the consulting side of things, like when you... Were most businesses reaching out to you, or were you kind of trying to figure out companies that you could work with? And then, like, what size of companies was that you were working with?
So my target market, first of all, was what I call the labor industries. You know, so it was you know whether it's manufacturing, but probably more service industry. But where you know the working class. Is what I wanted. So and the guys that need the most help, like most small business owners didn't start out with a business degree, right? Very few of them. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I'm passionate about. I want to help them get through the humps. And so that meant some of them were pretty small. And, you know, and I had to paint a picture for them to say, hey, look, we've been talking for the last 5 or 6 years, and this is an issue that I think I could help you with. And so then you say, look, it's not cheap, because good help is not cheap. But, man, think of how many years you could cut off, because you'll figure this out over 10 years. I did too. But, man, I could have figured it out in 2 years. And how much can that save you? And so that's been fun to do that. But some of the companies are, you know, $200,000 or $300,000 companies, and some of them are $20 million companies, you know, with different issues, right? So Some of them were manufacturing companies in Iowa, rural Iowa. Some of them are big tree companies in the Twin Cities. You know, even Davey, who I left, you know, I worked with a couple of their offices for a while. In fact, Meyer Tree and Lawn here, you know, I stayed working with them after I left, you know, helping them figure a few things out.
Neat.
Yeah.
So because there's different industries and stuff that you work with, is it like a lot of the processes that are similar? Or how is it, you know, that you can do and consult with, you know, company A, B, and C that all do completely different things?
Well, I would say the business operating system is a similar concept. So you have a vision of where you're trying to go, and you break it down, you know, division of labor, you know, some people are doing this part, and, you know, organizational chart of who's responsible for what. A leadership team, I think that I spent a lot of time working with people on leadership teams, and how do you function healthily to be able to communicate and hash out hard issues. And so it's, those things are similar. Now, with a manufacturing company, I can't get into their operations very, very well because I don't understand them. Right, but in a service business, I get it. In a tree or a landscape business, I really get it. So the closer I got to what I did, I could do more things for them.
Yep.
What is one crazy cool tree story?
Oh man! So one of the things that I got to do through the years is I put on this workshop called the Rochester Arborist Workshop, where I bring people, you know, tree guys from all over the world to present to kind of a local group of 300 to 400 arborists. And that's, you know, Minnesota, South Dakota, Iowa, Wisconsin. So they all funnel into Rochester. But I would say some of the craziest tree stories aren't my stories. They're things that I got to see from like Graham McMahon down in Australia, who climbs these 350-foot eucalyptus trees and does work on them. And it's just amazing. It's just ridiculous. So this last year, we had Anthony Ambrose from Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley, and he climbs the redwoods and does canopy research. And it's just stuff like that, that it's just, I mean, those things are massive.
Right.
They're so, so awesome. And Graham, this, he's a, you know, 50-plus-year-old tree climber, logger, that climbs up, and
his hands are the size of your head.
Yeah, I mean he's the Australian Paul Bunyan, beast. Right? But I mean, but so smart, so technical, such a craftsman of what he does. But he could be, you know, 300 feet up in a tree and launching big limbs out with a chainsaw, taking a dead like a stone dead tree down. It's like, okay, that.
It's taking tree work to a whole nother level.
Right. Yep.
What do you charge per hour for that type of work?
That's right.
Don't want to know.
Something that I've enjoyed seeing more and more with social media in the tree industry is when the climbers go up and they have like a GoPro or something on them and they're cutting. I think those funny. Every time it comes up, like I stop and watch that kind
yeah.
of thing. Like I saw one recently because some of them it's just, this is what I think, you just climb up, cut it, and drop down. Like, you bring houses and buildings into the equation.
Yeah, and power lines.
And yeah, and they've got, so this, I watched one recently. It was like rigged up. And I don't know how they do all of it, but he like cut it. It like went down. It was tied on a rope and it swung way a different way. I'm like, how the heck are they doing this stuff?
And that's planned.
Yeah, planned. I'm like, that is just so cool. You know?
Yeah.
But I'm glad that they're videotaping that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah, there's
it's
some.
It's entertaining to watch.
Yeah. It shows a whole nother light to the business, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Neat. What did you ever get into, like the woodworking side of things, of what people do with the trees once they?
Yeah, that's something I wish I'd done more with. You know, there wasn't a great market for it here in Rochester, and there's some companies in the Twin Cities that do it a lot, do it pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have a few carvers or a few people that work on the lathe that would reach out to us and say, "Hey, we need some of this," but. No, I didn't get too much into that. Every once in a while, I have a nice tree, and I say, I'm going to saw this up. And I'd sit on the wood for like, you know, 4 years or 5 years and say, I got to get this out of my shed.
Yeah, what am I doing with this wood?
Right.
I was in Winona at some business, and it was large pieces of wood they were pulling out of, was it the Great Lakes?
Oh,
is
yeah.
it the Mississippi or whatever? I mean, the pictures that they had of pulling these things out, and they go down to try to find these massive trees, and I can't remember if they fall off while they're transporting stuff back in the day or what, how these things get to the bottom of the water, but just amazing with the trees that are out there.
Yep. Right.
And the size.
And yeah, just the history that, that they can tell too, because the rings, you know, if it was underwater, you know, 150 years ago and it was a 100-year-old tree at the time, you know, it can tell a story through its rings of, you know, 250 years, which is pretty cool.
We are just in a log home in Lanesboro, Josh and I, and the wood, the story was the wood came from Canada and it was bought off of a bankruptcy auction. And it was already like Lego pieces, but large scale, pre put together with directions of how you could
really
make your home. Huh. Yes. Yes. And,
they Lincoln logged frame. It.
Yeah. Lincoln logged it. Yeah. That's it. And it was an amazing Lincoln log job. It was like, I'd never seen a house like that. All right, we made it, the 45-minute mark.
Boy, that went quick.
It did, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, thank you. Thank you for joining. What do you think about podcasting? It's a new form of putting it out there.
That's pretty cool. It's my first time at it, so it's fun to watch you guys, the craftsmen, do this thing.
We're maybe like 25 episodes in or 20, and it's as you go. It's just a conversation, which is the neat thing.
Yeah.
But then it's able to be saved, and you know, help others learn through it. It's been a fun form of content creation that we've got into. So
cool.
Maybe something you look into with your businesses that you're involved with.
I think I'll probably let you stick to this one.
Jay, if people want to learn more about your business, about your next role, where can they reach out to you?
I mean, the sergeantsgardens.com is where you can connect with me now.
Okay.
And so I still have my green collar consultant site up, but my focus right now is on helping sergeants get through their things.
That's awesome. Josh, how about you?
Yes, they can find me on social media under MediaCorp or MediaCorpMarketing.com.
And I am Bucky at the office of John Hall. We're on Instagram, and we're also up here in the conference room. If you ever want to come check it out, let us know.
What do we got going on right now?
Oh, and there's an art exhibit going tonight, Saturday night and Sunday night. Corey Strawman is a local artist that has her exhibit up here, photography. So come and check that out. I believe it's every night until about 7 o'clock, but there's a Facebook event out there as well. That's it. It's a wrap. Thanks, Jay. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's sweet. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Awesome. Thank you. Yeah. So you have all of